Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Putin Country, A Journey into the Real Russia is a nonfiction work of journalism by Anne Garrels, built on her long reporting relationship with Russia and centered on the city of Chelyabinsk, a major industrial center east of Moscow. Rather than offering a biography of Vladimir Putin or a Kremlin-centered political analysis, the book examines everyday life in what Garrels calls Middle Russia workers, professionals, activists, teachers, doctors, and families living far from the capital. Its purpose is to explain why many ordinary Russians came to see Putin as a stabilizing figure after the collapse of the Soviet Union and the upheaval of the 1990s. The book combines social observation, political context, and historical memory to show how deindustrialization, corruption, nationalism, and gradual recovery shaped public attitudes. It is both a portrait of a region and a broader explanation of the social conditions that helped sustain Putin's popularity. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, Chelyabinsk as a lens on Middle Russia. Garrels uses Chelyabinsk not simply as a setting, but as a representative window into the wider Russian interior. The city matters because it sits far from Moscow and St. Petersburg, yet it was central to Soviet industrial and military life, which means its fortunes reflect the larger transformation of the country. By staying close to one place over many years, the book can show continuity and change in a way that single-visit political reporting cannot. Readers see how local identity, economic structure, and regional memory shape attitudes toward the state. This geographic choice is important because it resists the common habit of treating Moscow as equivalent to Russia. Instead, the book argues that the experiences of the provinces are essential to understanding the country's politics. Chelyabinsk becomes a case study in how ordinary Russians absorb national change through work, family, infrastructure, and civic life. Secondly, the collapse of the Soviet system and the social damage of the 1990s. A major line of the book is the aftermath of Soviet collapse, especially the human consequences of economic dislocation. Garrels shows how the transition from state socialism to market reforms created instability, inequality, and institutional decay, even as it also opened new possibilities. The people she meets live with the legacy of shuttered factories, weakened public services, and a sense that the rules of life change too quickly and unevenly. This historical context matters because it helps explain why a figure promising order could gain legitimacy. The book does not present the 1990s as a simple moral lesson, but as a period in which many people experienced reform as loss rather than freedom. That perspective is central to the book's argument: political loyalty in Russia cannot be understood without taking seriously the lived trauma of transition, especially outside the elite urban centers that benefited most from integration with the global economy. Thirdly, why Putin appeals to ordinary Russians beyond ideology. The book's most important political question is not whether Putin is popular in the abstract, but why he appears dependable to many people in the regions. Garrels suggests that support for Putin often grows less from enthusiasm for ideology than from a desire for stability, continuity, and state competence after years of uncertainty. In Chelyabinsk, loyalty is shaped by practical judgments whether wages arrive, whether factories operate, whether life feels less chaotic than before. The book makes clear that this support is complicated rather than purely enthusiastic. Many residents can recognize corruption, inequality, or authoritarian drift while still seeing Putin as preferable to the instability that preceded him. This is one of the book's strengths. It explains political consent through social experience rather than propaganda alone by listening to local voices. Garrels shows how a leader can remain accepted when he is seen as restoring dignity, predictability, and national confidence, even if the costs are visible. Fourthly, a portrait of social strata, subcultures, and local civic life. Garrels broadens the book beyond political economy by showing the diversity of life inside a single industrial city. She pays attention to people with different stakes in the post-Soviet order, including upwardly mobile professionals, activists, doctors, teachers, religious believers, and marginalized communities. This matters because it prevents the region from being reduced to a uniform mass of discontent or nationalism. The book demonstrates that social life in Chelyabinsk is layered, and sometimes contradictory prosperity can coexist with resentment, official patriotism with private frustration, and civic energy with resignation. By including subcultures and local initiatives, Garrels shows that Russian society is not static or monolithic. The city contains competing moral worlds, from informal networks and everyday corruption to charitable work and community advocacy. This gives the book analytical value. It maps the texture of a society where public institutions may be weak, but social adaptation and local agency remain strong. Lastly, journalistic method, long-term observation, and the limits of easy answers. The book stands out for its method as much as for its subject. Garrels writes as a long-term correspondent who returns repeatedly over two decades, allowing her to notice changes that shorter reporting would miss. This gives the book a cumulative authority. Social conditions are shown as evolving rather than frozen in a single political moment. At the same time, the method has limits that are intellectually important. The book does not claim to solve the mystery of Russia or reduce its politics to one explanation. Instead, it presents a carefully observed local history that resists simplistic judgments about the country's trajectory. That restraint makes the book credible. It also means readers must work through ambiguity, since admiration for Putin, distrust of the West, nostalgia for the Soviet period, and awareness of corruption can all exist together. The value of the book lies in this disciplined complexity, which treats Russia as a society of conflicting memories and interests rather than a propaganda caricature. In conclusion, Putin Country is best suited for readers who want to understand Russia through society rather than through Kremlin strategy alone. It will be especially useful for readers interested in Russian politics, post-Soviet history, journalism, regional inequality, and the social foundations of authoritarian legitimacy. The book offers practical insight into how political support is formed in everyday life, and intellectual value in showing how historical memory, economic change, and regional identity interact. What distinguishes it from many books about Putin is its refusal to center on biography or high-level geopolitics. Instead, Gerls builds her case from the ground up, using long-term reporting from one industrial city to explain a national mood. That approach makes the book feel concrete and persuasive because it is rooted in repeated observation rather than abstract theory. Compared with more polemical accounts of Putinism, this book is notable for its patience, local detail, and empathy without naivety. It is a strong choice for readers who want a nuanced picture of why Putin's appeal has endured among ordinary Russians and what that reveals about modern Russia as a whole. If you would like to support Anne Gerls, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.